from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 25th day of June 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets for this Friday with Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions in Agrible, right here in Champaign County. He'll tell us about the rainfall across the Midwest, what's yet to come, and maybe a little bit about what it will do or buy for the crop across the United States, all on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Oh, and for those of you who can stay with us for the whole hour today, we'll hear our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn today at $6.36¾ settled 16¾ lower. September down 19¢ at $5.30¼. And December futures at $5.19¼, 16¾ lower. Soybeans, July contract at $13.29¾, 41½¢ lower. November at $12.69¾. New crop down half that much, 22¢ lower for the day. The bean meal futures at $3.47.20, $1.40 higher. The bean oil up, or rather down, $2.99 at $59.71. July wheat, 14¼ lower at $6.37 for the soft red. Hard red down 5¾ at $6.25. And the spring wheat in the July at $8.28, up 18¾¢. Live cattle futures at $122.80. The August 17½ higher, August feeders at $159.55, up $2.40, and the lean hogs at $99.77½, $1.07½ higher for 100 pounds. Crude oil at $73.95 a barrel, now around 65 cents higher. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.15¼, a penny and 2¢ lower. The wholesale price of gasoline is $2.26¢. The RBOB down a penny and 2¢ for the day. And natural gas at $3.51¢, that's up 0.8¢. Ethanol is unchanged. Mike Zuzulo now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. I saw a couple of bullish things earlier today. However, the market wasn't able to rally. There is rainfall out there. Anything else that pushed the market along?
I think the big thing, Todd, and we could see this in the price action early in the day versus late in the trading session and how we finished out the week, was initially with the weather coming on in key areas, key dry areas of the central corn belt, we saw the corn and beans give way, but we also saw the oats, the spring wheat, and the soybean oil all stay very strong. And that's, I think, our western corn belt, northern plains drought. And I think that's where the trade was really trying to separate who got the rain and who didn't through the price action and through the spreads. We got probably around 11 o'clock-ish from the news wires. Both Bloomberg and Reuters reported that the Supreme Court did give a legal agreement or a legal win to small refiners in terms of hardship waivers. That just simply tanked the soybean oil, in my opinion, and I think it really kind of was the death knell for any kind of short covering or any kind of bulls to come into the corn on a double-digit break. So I think that was really a big issue. And as I said to you last week, for me, last week's lows were absolutely critical to hold this week. We did that in everything, even with today's break, except in the soft red wheat. We did take that out on a closing basis. By the same token, though, Minneapolis wheat was able to go from 7.62 last week to 8¼ this week, and we're now back close to that high from a couple weeks ago, which was also the highest since 2013. So I would say we're pretty much right back where we were about a week ago, And we lost a lot of traction because we got rain and we got some more policy decisions.
And of course, we're looking forward to the acreage and the grain stocks reports that are coming up on Wednesday of next week.
Yeah, and this is a really interesting feature because we know the drowned out spots aren't going to get covered in this. And, you know, I had a client north of me who had 12 and a half inches of rain and lost 1,000 acres of corn this morning when he woke up. And so that's not going to be in the acreage report. But I also heard from more than one Illinois client, especially west of Springfield, and both north and southern Illinois, west of Springfield, that we probably did not get the corn planted that we wanted to get planted. And I think the acreage base for corn is probably the most wide open as far as I'm concerned. The average trade guess around 93.5. We talked about that on the last commodity week. I really have a hard time getting above 93. And in fact, my estimate's around 92.3. So if we would come in with that kind of a number, and with Brazil's crop maybe 10 million tons less than what the USDA thinks it is right now, that's 395 million bushels. So I still think corn is the player in this market, especially with spring wheat starting to support. And also one last thing, I'm hearing some hard red wheat yields that are pretty solid because we've been in the heart of it west of me for the better part of a week. And I would say it's okay, it's good, it's above average, but maybe not as great as the producers were thinking.
You think that the Brazilian total corn crop's less than 90 million metric tons?
I think the trade is starting to readjust their thinking that it could be sub 90 and closer to 88 because there are a couple private people out there suggesting that. And my contact in South America I talk with each week still feels like it's got a long way to go.
CONAB and USDA still will be updating those as we go through time. So sounds like there's potentially a lot of lift to this marketplace after we get through the acreage and grain stocks figures, potentially.
I think that as long as we don't take out those weekly lows from last week, I think that could, as we go into the July 4th mindset and the next big week, three-day weekend trading holiday, I think that's the key to this market is after the stocks and acreage reports, after July goes into delivery, we still got a dollar spread between July and Sep futures, which one's more correct. And I think these things are going to be more clear to us a week from today.
There is precedent for the marketplace to rally in July and August as opposed to fade into the fall harvest. I guess that's what you're thinking about, depending on what happens with those lows from last week.
Yeah, and this is the key. I think you really rounded it out perfectly, Todd. I mean, if the USDA was at 175 on national yield, you and I wouldn't be talking this way. I wouldn't be talking this way to you. It's at 179.5, and I just got to believe that's still a stretch given what kind of heat and what kind of dryness we went through in June with July still ahead.
Yeah, so we won't know that until probably the crop production report in August, although they could update it in July. That's not out of their purview to make a change. It would be from the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimate or the Ag Outlook Board rather than NAS, but it is possible. So lots of things for farmers to think about, and how do they manage the rest of the risks that they have on unpriced crop?
I continue to think the bought puts are the best route to go, especially with the wheat back in play. And, you know, what you just said a minute ago about the yield, if we still have 41% of the U.S. corn belt in drought next week at this time or more, I think the trade's going to have a little bit of a reckoning with their yield estimate as far as USDA's and maybe try and price that in early.
I had a hogs and pigs report. What do you make of it?
Very supportive, in my opinion. The disease pressure, the currentness of this market is real. I think it was overshadowed by the pork and bean trade. We still have about a 75% positive relationship between the price of lead month hogs and lead month soybeans over the course of the last 20 weeks, Todd. So I think if the beans had not been down, the hogs would have done a lot better.
It was showed fewer on hand than expected, correct?
Yes, it did. Now, by the same token, we've got a cattle on feed report this afternoon, and we've got a $10 premium in August feeder futures versus the feeders in Oklahoma City in the cash market right now. So I hope those on feed numbers are as low as the trade estimates, because that's going to be a big deal.
Anything that might or might not do for the grain stocks report next week?
Yeah, I mean, this is where if the on feed remains well above 2 million head, that's going to be a big deal to the trade, because the trade's thinking about 1.95. And I think we're all assuming in the analytical world we're going to start to see livestock numbers decline here domestically, but we'll probably pick it up over in Asia.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great week, Todd.
You too. Mike Zuzlow is with GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Thank you. Let's check the weather forecast now. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribull. Thank you, Eric, for taking the time with us on what is a rainy day in, well, our part of the world and, frankly, a lot of the Midwest. I think maybe what I'd like you to do is to kind of talk us through what this next week looks like, please.
Yeah, well, the setup for everything really begins pretty far away from Illinois, and the setup is actually in the Pacific Northwest. So I'm sure you may have heard on some of the national news and maybe from some of the weather reports that the heat coming into the Pacific Northwest isn't just going to kind of break daily high temperature records, but might break all time records for the Pacific Northwest. So like 110 to 115 Fahrenheit could be some of the heat they get in the Columbia Basin. That's pushing the jet stream almost, no joke here, almost to Alaska into the Canadian archipelago. And that's all west. So where are we? We're downstream of that, which means we have these persistent, weak, cold frontal boundaries that don't move. In fact, they're practically stationary. And as a result of feeding them with just copious amounts of Gulf moisture, in fact, every day, the atmosphere is regaining about 2 inches of liquid equivalent that it could rain out. Okay, every day it gets that from the Gulf. We're just, well, we have the boundary set up to produce that rain. And so we've already seen quite a bit of it. I mean, parts of Missouri, Nebraska were absolutely hammered, 6, 7, 8 inches of rainfall. And we've already seen some pretty big totals across counties in Illinois. And we're just not done yet. This is going to continue for a while as that large ridge dominates over in the western part of the United States. And the fair question to ask is, how early did we see this coming? The answer is 2 weeks ago, we mentioned that it appeared that there was going to be chances for, a wetter pattern evolving here at the end of June. But that's all that we said. That's all we can say 2 weeks out. You know, we can't pin down amounts. But now that we can, there's the possibility of another 1 to 4 inches of additional accumulation throughout parts of Illinois and surrounding states as we go forward.
Well, can I ask a couple of questions about, is it a big high that's over the Columbia Basin? Is that right?
Yes.
And so if I think of it much like a balloon or a big wheel mm-hmm. sitting there, it's pushed the jet stream to Alaska. It's rolling over the top of and southward down mm-hmm. The west side or east side of that. And then it crashes in, I assume, to the Gulf moisture coming up from the south. Mm-hmm. Where does that, how does that line move? And it is it about wind speed? Is it about what makes the line
yeah.
where the rain is?
Well, that line goes from Texas to Michigan, right? So this is a big chunk of the United States that we're talking about. And what has to happen is we've got to get the jet stream to stop going north-south like it's doing over the west and get it going back west to east, which was what we would normally think of in the jet stream position. And, the how much it is bunched up right now in the west, it's almost blocked itself up. And what I mean by that is if a weather pattern becomes stagnant for more than 10 days, we call it a blocked pattern. And this one's going to be like that for a while. So this slow moving boundary, which is practically stationary, we're going to be dealing with into the middle of next week. And we'll have to wait to see how the heat is retained in the west as to whether or not we deal with it maybe even through the 4th of July. But at this point, it appears to be a boundary that we're going to deal with here only in the next possibly 7 days from now.
As it relates to corn and soybean production, what's it buying us? Anything?
Well, on the soil we have here in Illinois, it's going to buy us time all the way through pollination. What I'm concerned about is northern Iowa, southern Minnesota. If they do not get the rains that are forecast through Saturday. So what we got to watch this carefully. If they do not get the rains that are forecast through Saturday, that is some very, very productive ground. Northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, that is going to miss out on this. The Red River Valley of the North is going to be dry through all of this. And where the heavier rains are coming through the Dakotas, it's in the central and western Dakotas, not the eastern Dakotas, which is maybe their more productive area. So we buy time, but just, we buy time through pollination, but don't forget, grain fill follows that, and we still have to get all the way to October. So there's more to come.
That brings me to the month of July. You maybe gave us time through pollination, but we do have grain fill. What happens?
Well, at this point, I think what I want everyone watching with me is the Aleutian Islands. So historically, whenever we have problems with drought risk in the middle of summer, we see the setup happening over the Aleutian Islands first. And I call it the Triple Ridge. It's where there's a ridge there, there's a ridge over Minnesota, and there's a ridge in the North Atlantic. There are some hints that that could come back, which means that we go out there to week two, week three, it doesn't appear that the Gulf moisture is going to have the same effect as it's having right now. Now, nothing's shutting down that Gulf. And by the way, nothing really shut it down in some of our worst drought years either. Tend to have a lot of moisture in the air. It's you got to have the mechanism to trigger it to come out like a front. In years like 88 and 12 had no fronts. It was just all hot and humid and hard to get that water out. So we do need to be aware that even though this is buying us time, there is still quite a bit more time in this growing season that we could start to run into some of those risks later on.
No, July last year wasn't that great.
No, you know, and that's what's interesting. I went back and did a little digging, and it wasn't until July the 11th that we first started to report on the fact that things were getting very dry in Iowa. So remember, we were fine through June, and then all of a sudden in about mid-July, like, hey, it's not rained, and it kept not raining. And then by the time we got through August, well, August was the driest on record in Nebraska, the third driest on record in Iowa, and the 13th driest on record in Illinois. And that's 130 years worth of data we're talking about here. So the point is that we still have the vulnerability of drought that is not and cannot be well predicted, you know, 4 to 6 to 8 weeks out. So I just want folks to, well, keep tuning in on Friday, and we'll just keep talking about it and try to give them a heads up. But we're not out of the woods yet, but this rain is buying us some time.
How are they doing in the Black Sea and China? Very quickly for me.
Yeah, Black Sea's doing fine. Plenty of rain. There's a low spreading over that area now. And honestly, the North China Plain and the Manchurian Plain are forecast to be cool and wet the next 10 days as well. So we're not finding other places around the country with problems like we are here in the Midwest.
Well, thanks for all that update. We appreciate it. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week.
All right, sounds good.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrient Ag Solutions and joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. Up next, for those of you who can stay with us for the rest of the hour, we'll hear all of Commodity Week recorded yesterday afternoon. Some of you will have to leave us, and you can pick it up on our website in its entirety at willag.org or hear it on many of these radio stations over the weekend.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Chuck Shelby joins us from Lafayette, Indiana, and Risk Management Commodities. And Joe Vaklovic is here, too, from Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee. Our special guest for the day is Mike Rosenberg. He's with Cooperative Farmers Elevator out of Lake Park, Iowa. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to it online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's start by getting a list of items we'll probably want to take up over the next half hour or so. We'll start with you, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management. What's on your list?
Well, I think the question going forward is, can we still make a record yield that the USDA has been projecting for quite some time?
Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain.
Acres and weather, and really what that means is acres and yield, which are two of your biggest inputs into the balance sheet. We still don't have a clue in regard to either, and we'll know a little bit more next week after the acres report. The yield is still a big time question mark.
And Matt Bennett from you.
I think those are the big things for sure. I mean, I'm interested to see what everyone thinks as far as demand looks like moving forward. You know, there's definitely going to be some question marks with the balance sheet. You know, how well do we have exports dialed in, for instance, especially maybe on new crop corn, but definitely want to talk weather and yield.
Joining us today also is Mike Rosenberg. He's with Cooperative Farmers Elevator out of Lake Park, Iowa. It's a fairly large system in the northwestern corner of the state, though. Mike, I take it you're located much closer to the center of the northern part of the state of Iowa than a lot of the system is.
Yeah, I'm in the north eastern corner of our trade territory, and we have 19 grain locations, three mega fertilizer facilities, very large feed mill division. We'll grind and process about 980,000 tons, and we have four lumber yards. So we do about $500 million in sales.
And how often do you turn the whole system, or meaning for grain, how much corn and how much soybeans goes through in a year?
We'll normally be on the south side or north side of 50 million corn and south side or north side of 12 million beans.
Well, let Matt Bennett ask the next question, Matt.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, what do you see as far as your obstacles moving forward? Do you have a whole lot of corn that you have to get met, needs that you have to get met before harvest starts, first of all? You know, and second of all, what's it look like in your area? You know, what are yield prospects? I know it's early, but how do things look, for instance, right now?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, we do have one rail facility, and we have some trains sold middle and late summer. We could buy those trains back for feed needs, but that's not our objective, of course. We would incur a penalty and be less margin than just selling corn from our grain department into our feed department. So we're active. We're paying, as of last night, $1.20 over the September futures. We are one of the most aggressive destinations right now for corn in Northwest Iowa. Yield potential has been hurt. I would say a minimum of 10%. If we do not get rain, they have us predicted up to 1 inch, maybe a strong 1 inch in the next 3 to 5 days. If we do not get rain, and next week it's supposed to start warming back up for us, the new 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecast, we'll lose another 10%. If we don't get rain the week after the 4th of July, we'll lose another 10%. I've been in ag business 43 years. I've been in all divisions of ag business. So I have some knowledge and experience on the agronomy side also.
Hey, Mike, before Chuck Shelby asks a question, can you explain geographically how big the draw area is for those 19 facilities in terms of acres or?
Yep. Okay. If you look at the state of Iowa, we go east to Highway 71, run that north and south down to Highway 20, east and west, back over to just north of Sioux City, into the fringe south, edge of southeast South Dakota, back up north to north of Sioux Falls, about 15 miles, and then back east to Highway 71.
Mike Rosenberg is with Cooperative Farmers Elevator out of the northwestern part of Iowa, joined our Commodity Week discussion yesterday. More with him and the rest of the crew in a moment.